and Deb Rees, experts in business, leadership and lifestyle.
Skilling your softly to a success for you. Emotions are your value, and your value is your business. UK Health Radio.
We're up and running, man, and Equine Energy. Absolutely got an amazing show for you today, listeners, and wow, it's another week.
It is.
It's a week closer to possibly getting in my office. It's all happening there behind the scenes. Trust me, it really is. But listeners, who knows? Who knows? I mean, we all make mistakes in life that we learn from. My biggest mistake was finding a bidding website.
A bidding website.
Yeah, yeah.
I need to clarify that. Like, it's one of the biggest.
So I found this website, listeners, that it's got all stuff on there from biking to furniture to big ovens, houses, cars, you name it. Wives, husbands, yeah. They're all on there being bidded for.
Yeah, it's an auction website, which I may put you on to be bidding.
There isn't a high enough figure bid.
No, there's not.
But you lose the thing, you know. I went on and thought, oh, I'll get some cheap office furniture for my new office. What I didn't look at was the small print. I mean, you have to read the small print on things. Do you know what I mean? All of a sudden, it was like £60 for what is a brand new two-seater sofa. But then, of course, there's not just VAT, there's hammer fees, and there's all kinds of things. All of a sudden, it's like, whoa, that went up a little bit. Plus, we got to travel.
I was going to say, what do we have to do?
We have to go 300 miles to pick it up then. And one way, it's like, listeners, what a mistake. Read the small print. Do you know what I mean? When you're going down the aisle, read the small print.
Okay, and any of those of you that are living with a shopaholic, don't let them near it. Anywhere near it.
You're right. Do you know what? One of my biggest things, I am a comfort eater and a comfort buyer.
You are, love.
I mean, I've today is a pretty high day for me because I know I've hit the fridge 3 times already today, plus done half a dozen crumpets.
Half a dozen crumpets?
We're not far off, do you know what I mean? But you know, this is where it is. It gets like that. It gets where you're
so
just...
Tell me why it's got like that. Is it because you're at home, so you can just nip to the fridge?
Well, there is that. I mean, I've spoke about cabin fever, and I spoke about working at home, and you know what? It is... We are lucky. You know, we are in the country. We're surrounded by greenness and wildness and all that kind of stuff. But that still doesn't remove the fact that I walk into my office from the bedroom, from the kitchen, from the living room. I pass my office, going to bed and stuff. And I'm just at that point, listeners, where I have to have that separation.
Yeah, you do.
I have to have that separation. And don't think, listeners, it's a bad thing. Don't think, am I increasing overheads perhaps, or, you know, everybody talks about the convenience of working from home. I get all that also. I understand that, you know. I'm increasing my overheads by about £100 a week going into the office. You know, I'm not saying it's a pretty big office. I have a lot of things I want to do in there. You know, as you know, my YouTube channel and all the recording, all the video work and all the stuff that goes on in there. But here's the thing. Sometimes you've got to be prepared to invest into your well-being. You've got to be prepared to invest into the wellness of what makes you feel happy, what fulfills you. You know, you're an introvert.
Right.
You know, you don't need an office. We did that and that didn't resonate with you. Well, it didn't work for you.
It was all right, but, I didn't need it.
Yeah. You know, everybody's well-being sits in a different fingerprint place. And that's what's important here, is understanding that just because something doesn't work for somebody else or works for somebody else doesn't mean that it's either way around for yourself.
I mean, it's this morning, you're in the kitchen asking me, are you okay being at home?
Yeah.
Do you need, you know, I'm like, yeah, I am okay at being at home.
And for me, it's like, I love my home, but working from there is just kind of...
Well, you're an extrovert, you see. It wouldn't be okay for you to go to an office in the middle of nowhere either.
No.
It'd be the same thing. So basically what you're saying is that you need to be around people in order to be energized, in order to feel...
I need that movement. I need that separation, listeners, you know, where I close the door, lock the key, and I've left that thought process behind, because switching off for some people is not easy. switching off is difficult for, you know, I find it hard to switch off unless I've relocated myself from the switch on place.
Right.
So let's take work as a switch on place. Unless I relocate myself from that, I am constantly thinking project mode. I'm constantly thinking, you know, I'm constantly thinking in that way and being a sensitive. And I sit, you know, and meditate this morning on our new stuff that you've given me, because Deb gives me work to meditate on, well, this one is apparently, how long do I have to do this one for?
It's really condensed and you have to do it for at least a month.
So, yeah, so I'm on a pretty intense meditative month, you know, and here's the thing, let's not hide behind the fact that we are designed to be conscious, sensitive human beings. And become sensual, become sensitive in ourselves. We have emotions, and as we grow and develop, we become more sensitive to those emotions. That's fact. It's part of being more open-minded, we could say. So the side effect is, you know, if you're an introvert, you may say, well, I need more space to be able to think for myself. If you're an extrovert, you may think, well, I need more space to actually be around people. And there draws this line of well-being. And we have a well-being expert with us today.
We do.
So I'm pretty stoked about this starting the conversation off this way.
I am as well, because this lovely lady deals in what I suffer with. So that's good.
What you suffer with? Husbands?
Oh, yeah, definitely, yeah.
But husbands, perhaps, you know, who knows what goes on behind the scenes. But you know what? Let's get this lovely lady in, because here we are, Deb. Let's bring it in. We have the wonderful, the well-being expert of experts, the guru of well-being-ness, we're going to say, is the lovely, wonderful Robin Harris. Bring it in. Robin, how are you?
I am great. Thank you, Paul. Thank you for that amazing, awesome introduction.
Oh, bless you, girl. Listen, thank you for coming on the show today. I've been really looking forward to getting you on. And I'll tell you why is that well-being has become a tick box. It's now a funky word. And it's a kudos word. And now, bear in mind, listen, I said funky and kudos and a tick box together, which means that it's also a word that's been overused and underused. Overused and underused. Now, let's see what I mean by that is it's a tick box, but not being, I feel, really attributed correctly into the tick box area. What's your thoughts on all this new well-being that's coming in, girl?
I completely agree. I think it has become a buzzword and a lot of people are jumping on that bandwagon because it looks cool. Like you say, there's kudos in it.
Yeah.
And we recognize on some level that it's really important and that health is our wealth. If we don't have the well-being, we're not able to do so many things and we're not able to enjoy life and life is a pain. Mm-hmm. But I think that we haven't really understood it. So when you say that we've underused it, I think we have in a way that we think it's great mm-hmm. as a concept, but we haven't made it necessarily true, grounded reality. Certainly in the business world, I think there's a lot of talk about well-being in business because a lot of people lose time through sickness. And mm-hmm. one of the main things is a bad back.
Oh,
but
yeah,
if you have a bad back or if you've looked into this, you'll know quite often that that's due to feeling unsupported.
Oh,
or
wow.
So true.
There's your stamp of approval then.
Feeling that you can't stand up for yourself because we're very metaphorical beings. So the business world has recognized that they need to support people's well-being or they need to be seen to support people's well-being. But quite often it becomes the tick box.
Yeah.
And I was at a well-being event in Cardiff just recently, and they were saying that young people now, I don't know how what age that starts at, whether it's millennial or Gen X or whatever it is, when they're looking to come out of university or they're looking for a new job, they're looking for places that actually walk their talk around well-being.
Wow,
so not just a tick box exercise.
You know, for me, Robin, it's like that word well-being, it covers just such a vast area. Like what is it? It's not just, you can't say well-being and just say, oh yeah, that means that, because it's just such a vast array of things that come under well-being, right?
Absolutely, Deb. And I think sometimes we think of well-being, wellness, as just an absence of symptoms, but for me it's so much more. And maybe that's where the tick box exercise comes in as well. If nobody's off sick, fine, we got good well-being. If nobody's if nobody's saying that they're stressed. But I don't think we really appreciate what that means. And it is so individual. It's so subjective. Mm-hmm. It's so personal. What does well-being mean for me? Because it'll be different for you. It'll be different for every individual. Mm-hmm. And it's, for me, it's about exploring what does it mean for you as an individual, and how do we enhance that? Mm-hmm. And I think just the way that we look at it in our society mm-hmm. is coming about it from completely the wrong way around, because we look at symptoms and we look at how to get rid of symptoms rather than what keeps you well. What does it mean to be well?
What I'm seeing is, as you say, is that the well-being has become a kudos tick box. But also I feel that, you know, coming out of, you know, gone through COVID, as we had through that experience, you know, it really emphasized and brought forward the understanding of well-being. Because I think it's such a mixed experience, you know, the other end of this, which is, I'm going to come back to my opening conversation, which was cabin fever, you know, people working from home. Great, I've got more time. But all of a sudden that time becomes a different shape of time that has a different emotional attribute to people's lives, is what I feel. What are you seeing in the wave of well-being since, you know, coming out of that period of COVIDness and people still working from home?
It's very varied, and it is very much around perspective and how people have responded. For me, I'm like you, Deb. I quite like being at home. But now that we're able to go out and about again, I'm beginning to realize, actually, I do need it. So I'm kind of that mix. I'm an introverted extrovert, or an extroverted introvert, whichever way around it goes. I need people at times, but I need my space a lot as well.
Yeah.
So trying to find that balance. But like you were saying about having to walk from your kitchen to your office, from your bedroom to the office, for me, I was really fortunate because I've got horses here and I've got a dog to walk. So I had those bookends to my day, whereas before we would have maybe driven to the office and then driven back home at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I had those things to separate me, maybe not geographically, like you were talking about leaving but to go to another space and meeting people. But I still had something that broke up my day and that said, this is work life, this is home life. And I think that can be really important. However people choose to organize it, I think just having that separation is crucial.
I mean, I'm a big fan there, Robin, of, you know, of the difference in a human doing and a human being. I'm a big fan in knowing the difference between the both. But also what I'm seeing is people somewhat become less motivated. And I'm having to find a different kind of motivation now because we haven't got an employer in our living room or in our home office room, you know, having to drive us and tell us, okay, now's your break. Now's your time to come back. You go to loo at this time and so on. And even in business, because of a lot of things are happening on Zoom, like we're doing here, you know, there is the urgency, but I don't know whether that urgency was a healthy thing or an unhealthy thing. That's kind of been, edge has been taken off or removed for a lot of people, which effectively I'm seeing, you know, for me, that was effect on my well-being because I didn't have the people around me pushing me is where I am. And do you see in that, you know, that are we less motivated now where it's brought an effect on our well-being, or we having to reshape our motivation is?
I think it's probably a combination between the two, and that'll vary from individual to individual. But I'm also seeing that lack of structure. So you don't go into the office and start at, say, 9 o'clock and you work through to lunchtime and then you have a break and then you work through till 5 after your lunch. And I'm seeing people kind of feeling a bit lost in that. They don't know how to maybe structure their day, or they have the work that they need to get through, but they don't have a steer.
Yeah.
Or they don't have the sense of everybody else around working away. Mm-hmm. And you have all these temptations. Oh, the kettle's just there.
Yeah.
And I need to do a load of washing. And oh, gosh, I haven't washed up since breakfast yet. Yeah. Or, you know, everything is there.
Yeah.
Saying, do me. This is on your to-do list as well as work.
Yeah.
And it's juggling that and maybe learning how to compartmentalize to a degree, because that's what we used to but it was structured for us.
Let me just jump in on the end of this, Deb, because I know you have a question there, but this is exactly what's playing out in my life. is that, oh, I just put some washing in. Oh, I'll have another cup of coffee. Or that I'm passing the fridge because I'm a grazer. I'm like a cow. I can't pass the fridge, you know. And all these things, actually, while it sounds convenient, it's actually pulling on my well-being because I have my to-do list here that's on my desk and then I have in my, you know, on my reminder, my Outlook that I have to go into. But suddenly, as I say, my other to-do list that wouldn't be there until I come home that then isn't merging with my business to-do list is mashing in. And that is, and I'll say this, listeners, that is having a huge effect on how efficient I am because I've become inefficient.
And we trying to juggle too many things all at one time.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about, before I come on the call, I thought, oh, maybe I'll put that washing in now before I go on. And then I end up sitting down looking at the plant aquarium we got and just staring at that, you know. And it's like, I'm about, Paul, you've got to get on there, you know. And this is because I'm working from home.
But there are lots of reasons why, and a lot of these things are related to trauma responses as well, when we just go into something like freeze or flop, where we don't know how to deal with it.
Yeah. Well, tell me about that freeze or flop. What do we mean by that? I love that concept.
There are various different F words that we can use for our stress responses.
Especially with you being Irish.
Not the swear words. We're used to fight or flight. We're quite common with that one, those two. Then freeze, flop, fidget, you know, when you start clicking a pen, tapping a foot, all of those sorts of things. They're all trauma responses or stress responses.
Mm-hmm.
And we can go into any one or a combination of them. But if things feel overwhelming and like being at home and I have all my work to do and all the home things, all my to-do lists, in fact, my two to-do lists, as you said, coming together. And if we don't have a structure that's imposed upon us like we used to have in an office setting and we used to have the separation, but it's all together, we don't have a structure until we're able to take a step back and maybe create that structure for ourselves. We're just trying to do it all.
Yeah.
And then it becomes overwhelming and we can go into a freeze response where you just don't even know where to start or a flop response where all you want to do is just run away and hide.
I think I'm more of a, well, actually, I think I'm a mix of a freeze or a flop. I mean, let's understand, I am deciding these are extra things. That's the thing, you know. I could, you know, there's two of us living here, is, you know, and I don't have to put washing. I don't have to do the dishes. It can wait. I mean, Deb has the right attitude, saying, Paul, that can wait until the end of the day. But for some reason, I've not got it in me and I make it part of my time. Do you see what I mean? And the reason why I'm saying this, listeners, because there's going to be you listeners, there's going to be you guys out there, you know, that do suffer with this. And this is why we're bringing this up, is to know that you have to manage how you work from home, not just work from home. Because as you say, Robin, you has given you that understanding, that freeze and flop, that just makes so much sense to me.
Or fidgeting or fleeing, because you might have a different take on why you do the washing instead of sit down and do some work. Yeah. Is it a distraction? Yeah. Is it running away from something?
Oh, yeah.
What does it do for you?
Yeah.
And also for me, it's getting curious. It's not about, oh, I shouldn't be doing this. I should be doing something else. Because as soon as you say the word should, it just feels icky. But if we get curious instead and compassionate with that curiosity and just, why? Why? And not why in a challenging way, but just, oh, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. I wonder what doing that does for me.
Yeah.
Because it'll be doing something. Because if it wasn't doing something for me, I would be doing something else. Wow. I wouldn't carry on doing something that wasn't supporting me in some way.
Right.
So even though it might look like I'm avoiding and that's not a good thing, there will be a benefit of some sort, like you say, a payoff as to why I'm doing that. And all it is then is getting curious and I wonder what that payoff is. I wonder why I do that. Am I avoiding something? What am I avoiding? And why does that feel uncomfortable for me in some way? What is it about that?
I mean, I'm guessing, Robin, that this is way beyond the pay rate of any employer being interested in the employees in any way in this way. But you had a question, Dev.
Well, I wanted to know about EQ energy.
It's equenergy, which is
equenergy.
Kind of a wordplay or a merging of equilibrium, balance, and energy.
I thought it was EQ.
I know.
As in emotional, yeah.
It's a kind of a play on words. There's lots of things you could put in there because people think that it's the horses, the equine side of things, and that comes into it too. But basically, it's when we can get our energies back into balance, then our body is a wise and biological system and it knows how to be well. It's designed to be well. We wouldn't have survived as a species if our bodies weren't designed to do that. And there's a quote, I think it's from Thich Nhat Hanh, who says that when we can get out of our own way, our body health and well-being and healing processes can come into effect much more efficiently. Mm-hmm. And
does the WILD stand for anything?
It does, yes. That's an acronym that I created from my own journey. So W stands for wonder. Getting into that childlike sense of wonder, so relates to the curiosity that I just mentioned, but also a sense of gratitude. And we know that gratitude is one of the higher vibrations. It's very good for health and healing and well-being. Mm. I is intuition, which is getting back to our own true nature, because we've talked about how we are all individuals and it is a very individual, personal, subjective thing, well-being and how we best support ourselves. L is to love ourselves as we are and as we are not, because sometimes we think I should be this and I wish I was that. But we're not. We are who we are, and we are who we are for a purpose. It took generations and lots of coincidences to create every single one of
us. Oh, I love the way you had that pause there. I got that pause. She said coincidences. I love that.
They're not coincidences. They're things that happen together.
Yeah.
Synchronicity. So all of those had to happen for each one of us to be here as ourselves, which is a miracle.
Wow. Robin, this is amazing. And you are listeners. We're going to do something quick, okay? And I'm going to jump into our first ad here before the station gives me a row for not getting it in. So we're going to be back in a quick 90 seconds. When we do, we're going to jump into the wild of this well-being and really look at the importance, not just the generalization of what well-being is, but really understand the power of it in your life for sure. So we're going to be back, listeners, in a quick well-being 90 seconds. Happy days.
The station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio. The station that makes you feel good.
Happy days! Yes, it's happy days, it's well-being, and of course it's Robin Harris.
Yes, we would.
That's not really an Irish name, though. Do you know what I mean? Harris isn't Irish, is it at all?
Well, my husband isn't Irish.
She's married name, see?
Harris.
So we need to know the maiden name.
We do.
She's not saying.
It's Palmer, but yeah, there's a long story behind that.
Well, listen.
Oh, no, wait. We didn't do the D.
We didn't do the D.
Of Wild.
Oh, man. What was the D?
It stands for dance, but when we can see life as a dance, because a dance goes, you know, maybe one step forward, two steps back. And we tend to think if life does that, that it's a bad thing. But if we could see it as a dance, that the tempo changes, the music changes, the mood changes, but it's all just a dance. Mm-hmm. It's not serious. That. It's not a competition. It's just we can go with the flow and it can be fun.
It's just a dance. I love that. You know, I always say to people, you know, that's going through a hard time, you're never down for long. It's like a wheel. You can never stay down for long. You'll always go back up, you know. So it's not the same as that. I prefer your analogy, but yeah, that's lovely.
Let me get your contact details before we dive into anything else deep. So here we are, listeners. You got your pen and paper ready because you should have that before we start the show every time. So Robin, call out your details and this, we'll call out this again in about 20 minutes or so. So how do we get hold of you, girl?
I have a website, which is equenergy.com, equenergy.com. And on there, on the second tab across, it's Let's Connect, and you'll find all of my contacts there. So email, there's contact form, WhatsApp, because where I live, there's not much phone reception. So WhatsApp is best for me because Wi-Fi is fine. Also, there's a link there to book a Zoom call with me. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy to offer people 30-minute free chat consultation. I'm on YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn as Equenergy.
Wow.
So find me on all of those socials. And well done. As well.
Well done for being all synchronized, girl, because people often got different names for different platforms. So well done to you for being all uniformed, as they say. And a good plug with your free 30 minutes. Take it up, listeners. Do you know what I mean? It's so important to understand the true depth and value of what well-being is. Well-being. It so is. And it is, Robin, it is diluted. Because I don't feel we are at that place of understanding the true layering and valuing of what well-being really means.
Absolutely. And there's a saying that we don't know how well we're actually able to feel, because most of us don't experience that. But if you've been down and you start to come up, then you see that things can change. And I always say that we don't have to do big things. It's the small things mm-hmm. that actually have the biggest of impacts, because the small things feel doable, so we'll do them. And we'll keep on doing them when we start to feel that they have an impact.
Can I ask you, Robin, how much is the well-being of a person or non-well-being due to childhood influences and conditioning?
I think a lot. I read Gabor Mate a lot and I follow his work, and I very much would have that perspective that things happen.
Say that name again.
Gabor Mate, Dr. Gabor Mate. He's based in Canada, but he's from, I've forgotten now which country he's from, in Europe. His parents ran away from the Nazis. Oh. He's in his 70s now, I think. So he has been living in Canada, and he is one of the leading experts around trauma and also around addiction. He works in Vancouver, I think it's the Lower East Side in Vancouver, where they have a lot of people who experience addiction. But he says that when we are very small, if we lose connection with our caregivers, then that is trauma. And yeah. Stephen Porges, the vagus nerve guy, he said that trauma is a chronic disruption of our connection.
Wow.
That connection can just be as simple as the mum maybe is depressed and she's not able to be present in the way that the child needs, because we need co-regulation at that stage. We can't manage our own emotions, our own temperature.
Oh, I see.
Pressure. Any of these things.
You said co-regulation. I like that too. I'm learning so much from you, Robin. Co-regulation, which means that somebody else is helping us regulate ourselves emotionally and mentally.
And if there's a premature baby, they've discovered now that skin-to-skin contact with mum will help that baby to survive and to thrive. If children don't get that, any child, they're not going to thrive. And there's been a lot of work around thriving for children. And if you think back when I was younger, maybe this is too old a reference for some people to know, but the Romanian children who were found when they went into Romania to liberate that country, and they found so many in orphanages who'd just been left in their cots all day.
Yeah, I remember that.
And they were so withdrawn because they didn't have that connection. They were traumatized. But that can happen on a lesser degree, or a less obvious degree, to many of us, because it's not our parents' fault. It's not about pointing finger of blame.
They're just human.
They are just human.
But their own parenting,
the way that they were parented, quite often, or they're parenting from a traumatized place themselves.
Yeah.
Wow, that's so interesting.
It's generational.
Yeah.
It is.
I mean, I was premature. I was 3 months prem, so I didn't get that. I was in that incubator, so I didn't get that concept, you know, and. I know, I'm a bit slow in everything. I was in a kind of a remedial class in school, you know. I just couldn't get things. I was slow in. It's only later in life when, living with Deb and really learning about myself and understanding my emotional journey, and I become more, aware of me and started to work on those triggers and traits and things. And that's the thing, see, listeners, what we learn here today is that, you know, well-being is quite expansive, and, you know, it's it's not something that you can just put. Yeah, and you can't just put into one box and say, okay, this is well-being.
Yeah.
I mean, I would say employers have got a hell of a lot to understand yet before they can say that we have a good well-being package.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, they perhaps have a good feel-good package, but not a good well-being package. There's a difference. That's it. Do you think we put in feel good and just throwing it into the well-being box and saying that's good enough?
I don't even know that it's feel good. I think it's talking about feeling good, but it's maybe not experientially feeling good. Yeah. And I think this is something that we do a lot. We spend a lot of time in our heads and forget about our bodies. And we like to think that we are thinking people, but actually we're emotional first. The first thing that happens is our feelings. I mean, think of an infant. They can't speak yet. They don't have a vocabulary even in their heads.
They have the intellect.
So what they have is physical sensations and emotions.
Yeah.
And we carry on that way, even though we like to think that we don't, or society
disconnects
us a lot of the time from that.
Yeah, people are worried to be in their emotions and follow them trust them. Right. So, you know, we go to our head because it's logical and there's reason there and it's a safer place, I guess.
Wow. So, Robin, in your business, of course, you do sessions, workshops, presentations and speaking opportunities. Listeners, say it again, and speaking opportunities also. And you know, also something in here is that you often work with people with autoimmune diseases, which is what Deb has, because she has ankylosing spondylitis. And, you know, and what you're saying here is that this could have come from what is a disconnect in the past from trauma.
The way that Gabor Maté puts it is that when we have that disconnect, we make an adaptation. And that adaptation is just to help us survive. And that might not make sense to an adult brain. Of course, I wasn't going to die. Somebody was there looking after me, tending to my needs. But it's from our own perception. And from that very basic part of our brain, it's black and white. I will live or I will die. There's no in between.
That's it. Yeah.
So if a baby thinks I'm not getting what I need, that means I'm going to die. They will make an adaptation. And that adaptation can be physical. It can be behavioral. And it's that change over time, because I think of it like a spare tire. You know that spare tire that some cars have that aren't full tires?
Mm-hmm.
And if you drove around on that for a long time, your car would be out of balance. It wouldn't work well. It's only designed to get us from where we have the flat tire to a garage to a repair center.
Yeah.
But that's effectively what we're doing. We're creating these adaptations and we're keeping them because we don't get the support to process it properly, to change out the tire, change out the belief for one that supports us. So we just keep running the one that isn't supporting us. It served us initially because it got us out of the difficult situation. It got us through. It helped us survive. But it doesn't serve us in the long run because it's a disconnect from who we really are.
Right.
Wow.
So that's what Gabor Maté says is the deepest wound. It's not the disconnect from our caregiver. It's that we carry on living in that because we need attachment. So we sacrifice our authenticity. We have those two demands, authenticity and attachment. If we give up our authenticity in order to maintain the attachment, then we disconnect from ourselves and our own truth and the intuition that I was talking about. Mm. But in doing that, it generally does lead to ill health of some sort.
Well, I have ankylosing spondylitis, like Paul said, which is where my spine is fused to my pelvis. And I have it in my neck and what have you. And I always said that, you know, because I grew up in a really scary environment, I feel like that it's happened because I was scared stiff, like literally scared stiff.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And as I was saying before, our bodies are very metaphorical. So your body will have been scared stiff, literally.
Yeah.
It's not safe to look around or it's
not safe to
be flexible.
Yeah.
Oh wow. That's it. A big one, hasn't it?
A really big nerve because there was so much violence. You couldn't look anywhere or you couldn't be yourself. We had to just be rigid. It was all rigid.
But why does the body have to hang on to that then? This is a bit unsound. Why does Deb still have to be that when it's no longer in her environment?
Well, I think Robin just explained that, where we carry on these things.
When it happens at a very early age, we're not able to rationalise it, and it gets held in our very cells. Bessel van der Kolk wrote a book, The Body Keeps the Score, which is all about that. And it's happening at a time when our brain is developing, when we're that young. So the brain develops within that hypervigilance, within that fear, and it's hardwired into our system because our brains are still making those connections, but they're making those connections in fear.
Yeah.
So until you're able to go back and revisit that and rewire that, which is possible, then you're still carrying it because you haven't processed it, you haven't rewired, you haven't made new connections that are actually supportive ones. So you're still driving around on that spare tire, that belief that is, it's not safe.
Yeah.
Wow. And so, you know, it's finding that place of safety in which you can unpack it and rewire it.
I just wanted to say that what you've said actually has brought me a bit to tears because I knew the scared stiff business, but, you know, that not being able to look around. I mean, Paul, you're always saying to me that I'm not practical and my motor skills aren't up to scratch of how they should be. You know, I've just got a bike, an e-bike, and I'm on it. And I'm saying to him, I'm scared a little bit out in the world. So it's kind of like, you know, also I've got it in my neck, so I can't turn to see if there's any cars or anything. But it's like, it's that. Blinkered shut off feel that's really rigid and inflexible, and it just has hit such a nerve for me, Robin, today. So I want to really thank you, because even that sentence has absolutely changed how I'm feeling about things.
Wow.
So, yeah, that's
and
amazing.
It is that simple. Yeah. It's making those connections, and like you were saying, Paul, about having that deeper self-awareness, and that's all we need.
Mm-hmm.
That self-awareness shifts things, and we start to know better what it is that we need, because it's not about the therapist is going to fix you. You're not broken.
Wow. That's amazing. You're not
getting
broken.
Back to knowing that you're not broken, knowing the things that maybe haven't been serving you, mm-hmm. but why do we hold on to these things? Where has it not felt safe to do the other, to look around, to be flexible? Where has that not felt safe? Because until we address that, it'll still feel unsafe for us, and we'll still be held within. And that's what Gabor Maté says as well. It's a restriction, it's a narrowing, it's a constriction.
Oh,
that's true.
It feels like that, and my body feels like I don't have mobility. It's strange. There's lots of times I'm saying to myself, Deb, but just do that, get some energy about you. Do you know what I mean? Because it's just so rigid and so stiff. What I want to say, Paul, is that you would have experienced that for the first 18 months of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Because there was violence around your life.
Yes, but I didn't see it. I felt it.
Yeah, you would have felt it.
I didn't see it. And I'm sure it plays out in lots of different ways. Because, mm-hmm. you know, what we are seeing here is that, you know, the understanding of well-being. And Robin, why are you not on the 10 o'clock news, girl? I don't get it. Do you know what I mean? You really should be out there. But here's the thing is that what my understanding here is that suddenly well-being has a wider range than what I even thought. And, you know, I suppose my biggest concern is how do we introduce well-being correctly into what is the biggest fear that we all spend our time in, which is work, corporate environment, business, whatever it may be. Because, you know, because that's where the damage is, not being done, but is playing out. And how do we now, you know, because I'm going to say this, I've met a lot of well-being individuals, but not many of those can speak it and understand it the way that you are philosophizing the layers here today. I will say that. But so we got to look at how do we now bring the quality of what you're talking here? How do we make room in the business world, in the corporate world, for that to happen? Because that's the big million-dollar question, isn't it?
But also I want to ask, do you work? Are you one-to-one with people, or do you work in the business world?
I can do both.
Ah, okay.
It depends on, I mean, I've run some wellbeing workshops for corporate, and that is maybe a good way, working one-to-many, where you can start to get mm-hmm. this information out. And yes, this is quite a different way of looking at wellbeing. And it has quite a history and development, which we probably don't have time to go into today. But yeah, I think Gabor Maté talks about being trauma informed. And he says that we need trauma-informed people in the business world, in education, because obviously that's huge, in the health industry, in the justice industry.
Yeah.
Because there is not trauma, true trauma awareness. Mm-hmm. And even I would say trauma awareness or trauma sensitivity, because trauma-informed has now become the next buzzword, or another buzzword, the tick box exercise. And a lot of businesses are saying that they're becoming trauma-informed, but I'm seeing it as another just, right, we do this, we go on this training, that's it, done. Yeah. And that's the thing. We again, we're putting it into headspace rather than into the fact that we are beings. And I do a workshop on from mindfulness to wild, which is about being, mm-hmm. because we cut ourselves off at the neck, yeah. and forget, yeah. about everything that's below that.
Isn't that crazy? But it's crazy. Sorry, I'm going to have to jump in there, Rob, because we're going to go into our second commercial. And when we come back there, listeners, have your pens and papers ready, because we're going to be calling out Robin's contact details again. So I'm going to jump back and I will see you in the course 90 seconds on the other side of this commercial break. Boom!
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Oh, happy days. No, actually, oh, well-being days. Oh, well-being days. We're back in, listeners, of course, the amazing, the guru of wellness and beingness, Robin Harris from Island Cam Wales.
Island Cam Wales.
I mean, there's Celt running through the veins from every section of the country almost. Thank you for being here today, Robin. It's been amazing. And we're just going to call out your details as promised our listeners before we go any further. How do we get hold of you, lass?
You can see me on my website, which is equenergy.com, EQUENERGY.com. And on there, second tab in at the top are all my Let's Connect details. And I'm also on LinkedIn, YouTube, Facebook and Instagram as Equenergy.
Happy days. Thank you so much for that connection.
So I wanted to come back in about this. Because trauma, I don't know if it's still the same, but it used to feel like, and especially, you know, also to me, that, you know, a trauma is where, I don't know, you've been attacked or something. You know what I mean? I would always feel like it was one incident.
Mm-hmm.
Said that right? You know, of trauma, you know, but it's not. It can be a series of disconnect over and over again, abandonment, this kind of thing.
Yeah, but it's small also, because here's the thing, what you're saying there, Robin, is these are not huge highlighters that create trauma. They are almost ripples that are as major as the huge highlighters.
Absolutely, and people call them different things. People say the big T traumas, so the ones that you were thinking of, the big episode one-off things. It can be small T traumas, they can be overt traumas that everybody would recognize, or they can be covert traumas. So gaslighting, for example.
You're listening to that called gaslighting. Gaslighting.
I didn't even know what gaslighting was until you told me.
Yeah, and how did I know?
And you promised me I wasn't a gaslighter.
I'm just kidding.
We had that conversation. It was quite a deep dive over our tea table having food. And she says, yeah, I actually asked her what gaslighting was. Anyway, sorry, Robin, we jumped in there.
Yeah.
So there can be the things that everybody would recognize as a trauma. But going back to what you were saying, Deb, about how you've experienced trauma in your early years, but also Paul would have, but you're not both experiencing ankylosing spondylitis, because different people come from different perspectives. So you could have two siblings who grew up in the same household, experienced exactly the same upbringing and potentially traumas within that. And they will respond very, very differently, and they could have very different presentations of disease or symptoms, because we look at things from our own perspective, mm-hmm. and that's unique to us. Yes. So that very much is a part of how our body holds trauma and the way in which that comes out, maybe as symptoms or disease.
Did you notice there, Paul, that she said dis-ease and not disease?
Yeah, absolutely. Isn't it the specifics are just beautiful?
I know, I love them.
They're beautiful. Yeah, hey, you want to come in because I got loads of questions.
Yeah, I've got loads of questions.
I know, and we are fighting for time. Listen, we've got about 5 minutes max.
I'm the autoimmune disease.
Oh, yeah, go on.
So I also want to say that you were talking about overt and covert, big T's, little T's, I guess. Because wouldn't it be fair to say that if every parent is has been conditioned from their childhood, and this is generational, I don't know that there's one of us in the world that wouldn't have experienced some kind of trauma. I feel like we all have in different, completely different ways. I mean, some kids might have been overloved. So they're overloved where it's like, you know, now they're grown up and they can't make a decision for themselves because all their decisions have been made for them. I think there's little T's in everybody. What do you
think? I would feel the same way. I have a colleague who says that everybody who comes to her is traumatized. She believes that everybody in the world is traumatized.
I agree.
But perhaps that's a bias because we all have these biases that maybe we're not aware of. Are kind of blind spots, but I personally see is the same, that people, as you say, because it's generational, because until somebody says it's going to stop with me, yeah. I am going to address my traumas, but even then we're addressing some of them. Can we address every single one? And are we addressing them maybe before we have children and pass them on? Or quite often, I think we become aware of them when our kids are small or they're teenagers and we have those challenges of rearing a child.
Right. I believe that, you know, when people get to 18, they should actually have to go through mandatory, if I'm using an American word, have to go through therapy about their traumas. You know, and that's being a little bit biased because there's loads of people that have babies before 18, right? But I just think, you know, or 16 or something. But then I think to myself, are we old enough and mature enough to be able to go have that concept and integrate them into our lives at that age? Probably not. So it's like, you know.
It's chicken and egg, isn't it? And I think we could maybe have some way of supporting children. I mean, they teach mindfulness in schools now in some areas. And they even have that thing at the doorway to the classroom that has, do you want a high five? Do you want a fist pump? Do you want a hug? Do you want a wave? So that the child gets to choose.
Yeah.
And I think if we could give that awareness and power of choice to children, that would be huge. But also supporting them in how to deal with their emotions when they come up, so that they're not pushing them down and not dealing with them in the moment. But
we're all scrapping for airtime. You're sorry, say it again, Robin. We're all fighting for airtime. Go again, girl.
If adults in the child's life, so their parents, their teachers, their caregivers, whoever, were able to do that co-regulation, able to sit down with them and say, okay, you've got an emotion. That's okay. It's not a bad thing. You don't need to be afraid of that. If it's anger, that's okay. Let's look at what anger means. Anger is actually healthy. How can you support yourself through your anger? Not anger is bad. Put that away. We don't, you know, nice children don't get angry.
But see, now the thing is with anger, that's an interesting one, because anger is fine to have anger. But when anger is suppressed, it becomes rage. And that's not okay.
You know, it's like inappropriate ways.
Yeah.
Let me jump in, girls, because this is just ferociously deep. It really is. And it's beautiful. It really is. And we've got about 2 minutes left. And there's something that I want to touch on. I mean, you know, which we kind of touched on in the commercial break when we were running through, which is, you know, well, I'm filling in an application form and it says on there, tell me about your well-being. Tell me about your traumas. Tell me about how do you measure yourself? You know, none of these things. I mean, we've got pronouns coming out of our bottoms, your left, right and centre, but what we haven't got is the understanding of well-being lined up correctly. And I said to you, you know what? We should be making it to the corporate world is afraid not to take on well-being seriously. And you said to me, if we do that, Paul, it's not going to work. You said that, you know, we have to make it attractive and fun.
Yeah.
Really?
Because when we push against something, it's a law of physics. It pushes back. So when we fight something, it comes back at us.
What we
There's a backlash. Versus if we could make it attractive and fun, if we can live a life that people go, ooh, why is your life so good? Why are you joyful? Why are you so blooming healthy?
Yeah.
How is your well-being so good? I want some of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we could do that and make it fun, because if it isn't fun, you know, we learn better when we play. If it isn't fun, we don't want to do it.
Yeah.
It's a chore. Yeah.
Right.
Well, usually we do it. I'm going to jump in here because we have absolutely come to the end of our time. As here we are, listeners. You know, first of all, let's get it straight, corporate world, if you're listening. You're losing 40% of your employees' potential before they get out of bed because of stress. Do know that is happening, which means if you have Robin in your business, you're going to gain an extra 40% in profits guaranteed because she's going to get all your workforce lined up to the best versions of who they can be, not what you want them to be, but who they can be in your business. The details are in there, absolutely. In Sydney world, you know, the well-being makes for good parents, good husbands, good wives, good siblings. When I say good, happy good, not forceful good is where we are there. Robin, this has been absolutely beautiful.
You have to come back.
Oh, absolutely. And you're only in Abergavenny, do you know what I mean? We can just come down and have a three-day coffee. Do you know what I mean? We absolutely need to do this, and we can do some video work and everything and get it out there. We'll have to make that happen, girl. It's been absolutely beautiful.
Really has.
So, listeners, until this time next week, you know how to get hold of the lovely Robin Harris. Do that. Corporate world, if you don't, be afraid. Because this lady needs to be in your business. It's been a fantastic well-being show. I feel really good in myself, but my heart is beating beautifully. Until this time next week, listeners, have an amazing well-being
and
week.
Boom!
For now! Emotion.